Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match.
Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. What a beautiful day to defend your liberty, and if not you, who? And if not now, when?
Those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat it. Not just the history specifically, but its mistakes. This morning, I'm going to share with you a tale of five kings, so that you can understand when Patrick Henry said, "I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know no way to judge the future but by the past." There was a king by the name of William the First, who began his reign in 1066. William the First took over the throne of Great Britain after conquering a new king. William the First was not from Great Britain. He was from Normandy. You see, William the First set up himself on the throne of Great Britain with one purpose: to fundamentally change the face of Great Britain. William the First did not like Great Britain because Great Britain was unique. Great Britain was a kingdom, just like every other kingdom, where the subjects had no rights or privileges unless the king himself granted them, with one exception. Great Britain had common law. A common law that said there are a common set of laws, rules, commonly known by all, based on common social standards, commonly applied throughout the kingdom. So although you were subjects to a king, and every day you were at the whim of the sovereign, there were some things that you woke up knowing to always be true. Common law never changed. And it bound the king in a certain way, constrained him to follow the common law. William the First did not appreciate these constraints and set about to fundamentally transform Great Britain once he was on the throne. William the First, in fundamentally transforming Great Britain, a kingdom that's unique, began to attack its uniqueness. What was that? William the First is attacking common law. Fundamentally transforming Great Britain into his home country, a foreign nation, William decides to replace the judges in the common law system with judges who are loyal to the king and his ideology, not to the common law. William starts using these judges loyal to the common law, loyal to the ideology of the king and not to the common law, to enforce his foreign law on the people, contrary to the English common law. He starts chasing the landowners off of their land, sometimes with force itself, literally running them completely out of the kingdom, and then handing over their land to his foreign Norman friends. How else do you keep foreign law in a nation if it's not full of foreigners who like the foreign law more than the common law of the land? He starts placing his agents into the churches, men who are loyal to the ideology of the king, not loyal to the word of God, willing to submit to the whim of the sovereign rather than follow the commands of Scripture. He uses these agents now to control the people, enforce his unconstitutional laws, and collect his taxes. William I reigns for about 40 years. We can now fast forward to the second king in our tale of kings, Charles I. Charles I, the year is about 1620, and Charles I is recorded through history as being a massive spending king. Charles, they say, likes to romp about Europe spending on his every whim and fancy. Charles is collecting the people's tax dollars to pay for his own folly. But you see, now Great Britain has a degree of separation of powers. They have the Magna Carta, which declares there'll be no taxation without representation. Parliament, now it's being called, is that representation. And Parliament stands up to Charles I and says, "Charles, we're not going to tolerate any more of your wasteful spending. We will not pass any more of your laws until you get your spending under control." Charles says to Parliament, "Fine then, but let me remind you that I'm king. I have a divine right to this throne. Why does Parliament have any rule over me?" And he dissolves Parliament. Now, mind you, he doesn't have to literally remove Parliament from the court. He can simply declare that if Parliament refuses to pass laws, he will. Perhaps he gave a State of the Kingdom address saying as much. Perhaps he simply said, "Where Parliament will not legislate, I'll just go ahead and regulate." Because that's the same as dissolving Parliament, declaring them irrelevant and impotent. Charles I continues his spending, and now, because there's no Parliament, he's afraid to collect a tax because he doesn't want to wake the people out of their slumber to know that their constitution is being violated. So he does not pass a law, but he realizes that as a king, he can issue a decree. A decree that says, "You will give me your money." Now, he's careful not to call it a tax, because that would be taxation without representation, and he doesn't want to make the people realize what he's doing. So he's careful not to call it a tax. He calls his decree a forced loan. A forced loan. Seven knights. The sheriff of Charles Day says, "Tax, mandate, mandate. Tax. We don't care what you call this, Charles. This is taxation without representation, and we will not comply, nor will we actually enforce this law." Charles throws these knights in prison, and they die there. He holds them without a trial, denies them their habeas corpus, as demanded by the Magna Carta, because they are a threat to the kingdom. Enter in James II. The year is 1688. James II is engaging in what has been identified in 1641 as the malignant and pernicious design. The Grand Remonstrance of 1641, which declared Charles I a tyrant, chopping off his head, gives us this malignant and pernicious design. A design to overturn and undermine liberty. The malignant and pernicious design is identified as a corruption of the court system, infiltration of foreign law, diminishing property rights of the people, manipulation of the monetary system, the government, inserting itself into the government of the church, and the people being disarmed while the government remained armed. The malignant and pernicious design to undermine and destroy liberty. James II is engaging in this malignant and pernicious design, but then decides that he's going to issue a decree called religious liberty. He declares that in Great Britain, you no longer have to be a member of the Church of England. You can practice any other religion you choose. You don't have to attend church in the Church of England. You don't have to speak to the bishops. You can have your own church leaders. You can have your own religion. You can meet anywhere you like and preach anything you wish. But, he says, there's a trade-off. You must comply with the demand of the king. Come back after the break. We'll finish our tale of five kings and tell you about James II's fine print on religious liberty. We are discussing a tale of five kings this morning, showing how Patrick Henry could possibly have said, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided. It is the lamp of experience. I know no way to judge the future but by the past. William I, fundamentally transforming Great Britain by attacking their common law, property rights, and giving land to foreign agents instead of to the commoners, to the British people of their kingdom. Charles I, a massive spending king, romping about Europe, spending on his every whim and fancy, dissolving the legislative branch because they will not follow his whim, imposing taxes outside representation. James II engaging in the malignant and pernicious design, corruption of the court system, infiltration of foreign law, diminishing property rights of the people, manipulating the monetary system, inserting his agents into the churches, and disarming the people while the government stayed armed. James II issues the religious liberty decree that says, you no longer have to attend the Church of Great Britain, and you can practice any religion you'd like. Except, you must inform the king first where you'll be meeting, who will be meeting with you, who will be preaching, and what will be said. You have to make sure that you also promise that you will never, ever, ever say anything that might be construed as negative against the king. Because, you see, James has incorporated this law called seditious libel that says it's against the law to criticize the king, punishable by life in prison. Now, that's a death sentence in James' day, because prisons were not cable TV and workout rooms, dank, dark cells with disease and starvation, pestilence. Listen. Then we have George III. George III, the king who decided to be an evil and oppressive king engaging in the malignant and pernicious design against our founders of this nation, doing the same as William, Charles, and James. Creating taxes outside representation, creating laws in which the lawmakers are not bound by the laws that they create. mandating purchases. And then if the colonists refused to purchase the mandated goods, George called them criminals, allowed his agents to search their homes without warrants, arrest them if they're found with purchases outside the mandated purchase, throwing them in prison and then transporting them to Canada to be tried by the French. George III, James II, Charles I, William I, all tyrants whose goal is to overturn, undermine, and completely destroy liberty. Oh yeah, I forgot. James II was also overturning, undermining, and writing law. You see, in 1688, they had separation of powers. They had a legislative branch in Parliament, they had an executive branch in the King, and they had a judicial branch. And the King was not allowed to write law, overturn law, or set aside law. That was a duty only reserved to the legislative branch. And when they brought a revolution against James II, bringing the English Bill of Rights of 1689, they declared that when James II was writing law, overturning law, and setting aside law, that was the complete destruction of liberty. William I, Charles I, James II, George III, tyrants, enter in Barry I.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
A Tale of Five Kings, showing us how those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat its mistakes. And also, I believe, showing us how far we've come from a constitutional republic to, perhaps, am I being out of line by saying a kingdom? I have given you four kings. William I, Charles I, James II, and George III, all engaged in the goal to destroy liberty. What do they have in common with Barry I? King Barry I, I call him. Remember, William I was not appreciative of the common law of Great Britain that limited him and constrained him to recognize some of the rights of the people. King Barry I doesn't appreciate our common law either, does he? Always trying to find a way to circumvent and destroy the Constitution. William I set about to fundamentally transform Great Britain through corruption of the court system, infiltration of foreign law, diminishing property rights of the people, running the people off of their property, and then giving their property to his foreign friends. Perhaps the beginning of the United Nations. Just like we have in this country, handing over our land to the UN. How about William I just simply inviting his friends over, perhaps giving them amnesty, perhaps declaring that there is no limitation on his friends coming into the country? We have to give them land and businesses. Charles I, a massive spending king, romping about Europe, spending on his every whim and fancy, using the taxpayers' dollars as his vacation fund. King Barry I as well. Charles I also declaring Parliament irrelevant and impotent, passing laws when Parliament refuses, also collecting their taxes. In the name of national security, Charles I trying to tell the people we have to fund our allies in these foreign wars. But then the people realizing Charles is not funding their allies. He's actually funding their enemies. Enter in aid to Egypt. Aid to Syrian rebels. I'm sure if Charles had F-16s that he could send, he would be doing that. I'm sure Charles would have been gun running. But here we have King Barry I doing the same thing. James II being charged with overturning, undermining, and completely destroying liberty by writing law, setting aside law, and declaring law irrelevant. A violation of separation of powers. Demanding all who worship, who have engaged in their religious liberty, must comply with the king's decree that you can never say anything bad about the king. No, I'm not talking about Barack Obama. I'm talking about James II declaring a law called seditious libel that says if you say anything negative about the king, you're going to prison for life, which is a death sentence. The law of seditious libel also says, truth is no defense. Which means, even if you're right, even if the king is wrong, you can't criticize the king. Rodeo clowns. Don't talk about king behind the pulpit. Because we'll revoke your 501c3, or we'll just threaten you with that, just so long, so that your pastors tremble in their pulpits against a man by the name of Barack Obama. Tremble in their pulpits, no longer. No longer fear of the Lord in their hearts, only fear of man. Well, listen. King Barry the First. How is he different? He's absolutely not different. Aiding Libyan rebels. Who knows which side they'll be on next week? Aiding Syrian rebels. Who knows what side they'll be on this week? How about TARP, bailouts, Congress doesn't approve. But guess what? Our King Barry can pass laws, set aside laws. He can declare that laws are irrelevant. We're simply not going to enforce laws, he says. We're going to allow criminals to head up our IRS. We're going to give tax dollars to business executives. We're going to romp about Europe, spending on our every whim and fancy. We're going to threaten people with seditious libel. If you ever dare to criticize King Barry I, you will be banned for life from your job. You will be fired. You will have to decide, do you want liberty or do you want a paycheck? You will have to allow the government to engage in warrantless searches, just like George III. You will have to allow for the murder of U.S. citizens without judicial process, just like James II. You will have to allow the president to dictate to companies who their employees can and cannot be, just like William I and Charles the First. You will have to allow the king to steal money from the people, to run guns into the hands of criminals, for criticizing the king. And then you're going to have to tolerate a government that will pass laws in which the lawmakers are not bound by those laws. Do we not see what's going on? I'm not just giving you a history lesson today for your amusement. I want you to see what is going on here. Are we that asleep? Are we that uneducated? Are we that unaware that we no longer live in a constitutional republic, but we live in a kingdom where King Barry the First can rule over our legislative branch? And the legislative branch can pass laws that they themselves are not bound to. Do you see? That's what our colonists went to war over. It was not taxation without representation. It was legislation without representation. Legislation, where the legislators are not bound by the laws that they pass. If your legislators do not have to submit themselves to the laws that they create, that is a government, not by representation, but by fiat. We are a constitutional republic by law. And simply because our government has decided to be lawless does not change the government that we have. It changes how they operate, but it does not change the government that we have. What has to happen this morning, what has to happen today, is that we, the people, must wake up and demand our government comply with law. We are a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Not a government of politicians, by our state capitals, for Washington, D.C. We must stand and rule over government. Because if we get lazy in our luxury, if we get pacified in our prosperity, government will rule over us. We've not lost anything. It's not the government's to take. It belongs to us because we breathe. And the only way we lose our liberty is if, as Patrick Henry said, we simply roll over and lay supinely and allow them to put the shackles on our feet. Stand up! Stand up! It's your liberty, your children's, time to stand up.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
May I remind you that if you're interested in not repeating the history and the mistakes that came before us, go to chrisannhall.com, K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E,
HALL.com.